We're loosely following the theme of God shepherding us, but we're starting in Psalm 23 this morning, and then tonight Psalm 46, and then tomorrow we're going to look at negative incident in the life of Moses from Numbers. So all of them pretty much talk about leadership in some way and God's guidance in some way. If you've done much flying, then you've probably heard this announcement. Goes like this. In the unlikely event of cabin depressurization, none of us really believe this when we're on the plane, oxygen masks will appear overhead. Pull a mask down towards you, and when you do, this will activate the flow of oxygen. Oxygen may be flowing, will be flowing through the mask, even if the bag does not inflate. You can tell I've heard this before. Cover your nose and mouth with a mask, pull the straps tight around your head, and continue to breathe normally. And I found this on a blog, on a website. It said, breathe normally. Those masks came down on a flight that I was on one time, and no one was breathing normally. but then that section of the training video ends with, remember to secure your own mask before assisting others. And that's kind of stuck in my mind for the last, last couple months or so. I did some flying. I went to New Zealand for a few weeks, and then I went to Perth for a couple weekends as well. And I got to thinking, I wonder which of those two people that we tend to identify with the most. The adult or the person, the little person who needs assistance. And I suspect that most of us would naturally identify with the adult rather than the person needing assistance. And as I thought about Psalm 23, I think, you know, it's not always the easiest thing to speak on a passage that everybody knows. You've heard over and over and over again, and Psalm 23 is probably one of those passages. The time that we hear Psalm 23 the most is when? At funerals? Yeah. Yeah, feel free to interact with me as well and ask questions and interrupt and stuff. But we normally hear it at funerals, and I'm not sure that's the best context, really. I'm not sure that it's the original context. We have that line, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, and I think because of that line, we automatically use it at funerals. But it's probably, I think, better used in the context of ministry. And I don't think we have a lot of problem viewing God as a shepherd. I think we get that. But what I think we have more of a problem with is viewing ourselves as sheep. Especially if we're people who've been involved in ministry and involved in leading other people. It's easy to start seeing ourselves as separate from, as different from the people that we're leading rather than still sheep ourselves. Our sheep are kind of stupid. Sheep can be pretty helpless at times, and we don't like necessarily to view ourselves as helpless and stupid. But that's probably reality.
As they say, I resemble that.
That's right. And I think it's good just to be reminded of that from time to time. I really like the way this psalm begins. So it says a psalm of David, which I take as part of the psalm, the superscription. A psalm of David, the Lord is my shepherd. And what strikes me is that David the shepherd recognizes that he has and he needs a shepherd. Even shepherds need a shepherd. Even kings need a king. And if we were to go through the psalms as well, that image of God as king is probably one of the primary images of God, especially in the Psalms, but through the whole Old Testament, but especially the Psalms. And a shepherd is really in the Old Testament, not just in Israel, but in other countries as well. Shepherd became sort of a stock image for the king. I don't know if you've ever read the book of First Enoch. Has anybody read the book of First Enoch? I said this in chapel the other day, and it was only me and another guy, and I would have predicted it was the other guy, a couple of nerds. But First Enoch is in the pseudepigrapha, so it's one of those Jewish books that contains some really good stuff, but obviously isn't the same quality and inspiration as the biblical books. But there's two chapters in 1st Enoch, chapters 89, chapters 90, that... they're not real long chapters, but these two chapters are often called the animal apocalypse. And what it does is it presents the history of Israel in the Old Testament in this shepherd-sheep imagery. It's kind of interesting, I think. So it's an allegory, and you've got shepherds, you've got sheep, you've got predators. And it begins with... one of the interesting things is that the people that lead Israel are always sheep. They're not somebody that's come from outside, but they're some sheep, a ram that has risen up, become strong within the flock, and then protects the flock against the predators. And so you have Moses. Moses was born, and he was actually a little lamb that the wolves had surrounded, and God delivered him from the wolves, and he grew up to be this ram that also then delivered the flock of Israel from the predators, who were the Egyptians. They were presented primarily as wolves. And then during the period of the judges, Israel is attacked by various predators. There's foxes and dogs and wild boars who attack Israel. And there's a sheep that rises up, a ram that delivers. And that's how the judges are portrayed in that section. And then finally you get Saul and David and Solomon. God raises up these rams as kings to shepherd Israel. And the point of all that is that God always uses sheep to do the shepherding. And it's even interesting in Revelation, you get there, John 1, John the Baptist says, "Behold, the Lamb of God, who takes away the sin of the world." Revelation 7, I think it is, 7 or 9. It says, "The Lamb who is in the center will lead them and shepherd them to streams of water." And so you still have that same idea that Jesus is the Lamb that was slain, and he's also the shepherd of the sheep. And I think that's a really good thing to remember at the beginning of the psalm, is that even shepherds need a shepherd.
Does that mean that, seeing as John the Baptist said that, "Behold the Lamb of God," they would immediately understand what he was talking about?
I think they would have understood the takes away that... Well, no, that's a good question. Did they understand? Because they never really understood until after the resurrection.
That he was insinuating that this one, as the Lamb of God, would be the shepherd. Is coming as the shepherd.
I think they would have probably gone more sacrificial with that.
Right.
Yeah, I actually did my doctoral dissertation on the shepherd image because I wanted to figure out what were the Jews expecting when Christ came and said something like, "I am the good shepherd," from John 10. I just wanted to explore that. I'm not sure that I found exactly what I thought I would find, but I did study this image quite a bit. I don't know if they would have gotten it in John 1.
It's interesting, isn't it? The difference between the fact that if they either saw him as the shepherd or they saw him as the sacrifice.
Uh-huh. But could they have seen him as both?
Yeah.
Well, I think that's the thing that John adds to the shepherd image that wasn't there before, is the good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. You don't see that anywhere else except possibly Isaiah 53, and even there it would be... The shepherd imagery wouldn't be real, real strong, other than all of us like sheep have gone astray. It's there. But the shepherds in the Old Testament weren't, like, you weren't required to lay down your life for the sheep. You didn't have to die for the sheep in protecting them. And David is probably the closest to that. You know, he attacked the lion, he attacked the bear, he attacked Goliath. And I think that's the imagery in 1 Samuel 17 is... Goliath is a predator that's coming against the flock of Israel, and the shepherd of Israel doesn't deal with the predator. So the new shepherd comes, because David's introduced in chapter 16 as a shepherd. He's introduced in chapter 17 as a shepherd. He goes out to fight the big predator, the big beast, with the implements of a shepherd, and I think that's quite intentional. And then in chapter 18, he's going out and coming in before the troops of Israel. So there's all of this imagery of what God's ideal leader is like, and Jesus then is the obviously the epitome of that, an epitome of David.
Yeah. The other point just there, the shepherd normally wouldn't lay down his life for the sheep unless he owned the sheep. If he owned the sheep, that would be a different.
He's got a bit more, yeah.
More investment.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. I think he'll pick up him on it. Yeah, I forgot that earlier. So. Okay. All right. Well, in verse 1's kind of interesting. It's actually, shepherd is a participle, which I don't know if that means anything to anybody, but it means it can be translated either as a noun or a present tense verb. So, my shepherd, the Lord is my shepherd, or the Lord is shepherding me. And most of the English translations translate it as a participle. Interestingly, the Septuagint, the Greek translation of the Old Testament, translates it with a present tense verb. So the Lord is shepherding me, which I found quite interesting. And it may be pushing a point, I don't know. But it's not saying the Lord has shepherded me in the past, or saying that God will shepherd me in the future, but God shepherds me constantly. Probably includes the past. He has been, he is now, and he will be. So 24/7, 365 days a year, God is looking after his people, looking after his sheep. Psalm 121:4 says, "He who watches over Israel will neither slumber nor sleep." And sometimes the bad shepherds of Israel are said to be sleeping. And the Lord is like a shepherd who's vigilant and watchful, looking after his people all the time. It's really quite amazing when you think about God's individual care of an individual sheep. In the Old Testament, God's called the shepherd of Israel. Psalm 80, verse 1, some other places called the shepherd. A couple places he's called a shepherd of the stars. It doesn't actually say that, but the imagery is there. Psalm 147:4 says he counts the stars and leads them all by name. That is easy to miss, but that's shepherd imagery. So he's got his staff, you know, he's tapping them each on the shoulder as they go by, counting them, calling them by name. Isaiah 40:26, he leads forth their host by number. He calls them all by name. And so you've got this God who shepherds the stars, holds the universe together, God who shepherds a nation, but yet he also shepherds the individual. Very concerned about the individual. And then the result of the shepherding, second half of verse 1, I shall not be in want. So because God is my shepherd and shepherds me, there's nothing that I'm going to need. New English translation says I lack nothing. New Living Translation says I have all I need. You go through the Old Testament and passages that talk about the Exodus, usually God is portrayed as a shepherd going before Israel. So how did he go before Israel? In the wilderness? Pillar of cloud, pillar of fire, going before the people. When they stop, what's he do? Sets up his tent in the midst with the flock around him. Very interesting imagery. And then they pack up the tent and move on to the next place with God leading. Nehemiah 9:21 says, "For 40 years you sustained them in the desert. They lacked nothing." Same phrase as Psalm 23. They lacked nothing. And so verse 1 focuses on more of a specific statement, and then the rest of the psalm is going to, or the general statement, then the rest of the psalm is going to deal more with specifics. Verse 2, "He makes me lie down in green pastures." If you know much about the land of Israel, that's not our gong, is it? Our continuous gong. Southern Israel, land of Judah, where David would have come from, it's rains pretty erratic. And so for there to be green pastures, it's not a real common thing. For green pastures to stick around for a very long time is not a very common thing as well. And so there has to be pasture land for the shepherds. As if the vegetation is green, then the sheep are getting most of their moisture from what they're eating, so they don't need water. But then as the green content starts to go down in what they're eating, the moisture content goes down, then water becomes more of an issue as well. One writer that I read said the shepherds never wander. They always know where they're going and why. And David says that the Lord is like that. He's a skillful shepherd. He provides green pastures. In other words, what he's saying is whatever his sheep need, he provides in terms of food. Second half of the verse, he leads me beside quiet waters. So then when the flock does need water, the shepherd's able to take them to waters where they can actually get a drink. So it's not rushing waters, it's not violent waters, but it's peaceful, quiet waters. And then as a result, verse 3, he restores my soul. So I've got food, I've got water, and my life is restored, and I continue to go on. My tired and hungry spirit revives. As a competent shepherd, the Lord guides his people where they need to go. He guides me in the paths of righteousness, or it could just be in the right paths for his name's sake or on behalf of his name. In other words, God knows the right trails. He knows where to get from here to there to get the food that they need, to get the water they need. And if he can't do that, then his reputation as a shepherd is going to fail. We look back on the Old Testament, God's got a pretty good track record. Again, the Exodus is portrayed as God leading his people as a shepherd, leading his flock through the wilderness. And you think about that, what God did for the people in the wilderness. He gave them food every morning, manna in the wilderness. There would have been, I don't know, there's a dispute about how many people were going through on the Exodus, but just say several hundred thousand families. I mean, think about that, feeding and giving water to several hundred thousand families and all of their livestock for nearly 40 years. Fed them every morning, many times brought water out of rocks. We know of at least three where he did that. Twice, and then gave them pure water that was bitter. Imagine taking that many people through that extreme kind of environment. Jeremiah 2:6 talks about the Lord bringing Israel out of Egypt and leading them through the barren wilderness, through a land of desert and rifts, a land of drought and darkness, literally the shadow of death, like we have in Psalm 23, a land where no one travels and no one lives. But God brought his people out of Egypt and sustained them for 40 years in this territory. And David says, you know, I have found that God has been doing that in my life. God has led me onto the right paths to sustain me all of my life. There's a shift in verse 4.
Can everyone hear that? Sorry.
Yeah.
You know, stress. It's going to be with us. Okay. If it does, I'll come back and vacuum. Okay.
Thanks. There's a shift then from third person to second person in verse 4. So David switches from talking about the Lord to talking directly to the Lord. And everything's been pretty positive up until this time, but now it becomes a little bit negative. He says, even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. And seems to be saying that sometimes the right paths that God leads us on become kind of dark and difficult and scary. We might think of a deep canyon. Who was telling the story? You were telling the story about being on a walk. You come around the corner, and maybe the lighting changes, and there's something around the corner. There's a predator. There's a snake. There's a bandit. Something that you weren't expecting. That's the idea. You're on a canyon floor with steep, high walls, twisting and turning, and anything could be around the corner. One of the things I discovered in my study of the shepherd image is that it usually is used the most in times of crisis. Really quite interesting. So you look, passages that talk about the Exodus, it gets used quite a bit, either during or looking back on. The time of the exile to Babylon. A lot of shepherd imagery in there in Jeremiah and Ezekiel. And then coming back in the second Exodus from Babylon. Zechariah talks about it a lot. And then even in the Gospels, I think that's one thing that is going on in the Gospels is that Israel is still in effect in the exile. And Jesus is going to be meeting a need in the exile. It's also a real emotional figure. So you've got this figure used at crisis. You've got an emotional figure. You've got the key emotions are fear. And on the other hand, peace or well-being tends to be the emotions associated with it. It's a very relational figure between the shepherd and the sheep. And what turns this potentially negative situation of going through the valley of the shadow of death into a positive one is the presence of the shepherd. And you go through the Bible, and one of the most common promises, one of the most precious promises in the Bible is, I will be with you. And because God is with us, we don't have to fear. So the point made so far in the first four verses of this is that God protects us from harm, and God provides all of our needs. God protects, and God provides. And then the major break in the psalm occurs at verse 5. It's a little bit of a shift in image from the shepherd, but it's still, I think, still a shepherd passage. You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. You anoint my head with oil. My cup overflows. And so the Lord is probably still being envisioned here as a shepherd, but rather than being out with the sheep in the countryside, out in the hostile, extreme environment, we've come into the Bedouin's tent. And there's a lot that's going on probably in the background in terms of Bedouin hospitality, Middle Eastern hospitality. David says, I'm the honored guest at the Lord's banquet in his tent. That implies several things. His host has amply supplied him with food. You prepare a table before me. One of the couples that does some teaching at the college, they were in the UAE for several years. And you know, you go to an Arab person's house. Anybody eaten at an Arab person? They lay the food on. And if there's a lot of food left over, they feel like, no, if all the food's gone, sorry, they feel like they haven't been hospitable. So you prepare a table before me. In coming under the Lord's roof, he's come under his protection. So I don't know if you've seen the movie Lawrence of Arabia, but there's a scene in there where Lawrence is under Omar Sharif's protection. That's a real Middle Eastern thing. His host has provided him with physical comfort. You anoint my head with oil. Again, this couple from the college said that you go to somebody's house, and a lot of times they'll give you bottles of perfume and stuff like that. So the anointing with oil, it's different than the anointing of the Messiah. It's actually even a different word. It's more of a not a setting apart consecration sort of a anointing, but more just of a refreshment. Yeah, refreshment idea.
Wash the feet and anoint the head.
Yeah, that's the idea. That's the idea. And then his host has given him more than enough to drink. My cup overflows. And I think David is making pretty much the same point, but with just a twisting of the image a little bit, and that is that God protects him from harm and provides all of his needs. And then verse 6 switches back again from the second person to the third person. Surely goodness and love will follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. David anticipates his future. And his word choice is really interesting. I think it's pretty powerful. Where I've got in mind will follow me. Does anybody have anything different? Verse 6. Somebody had one when I did this recently. They actually had the word. The word is literally pursue or follow me. Surely goodness and love will pursue me or follow me all the days of my life. Usually it's used negatively. It's a negative action. So somebody's chasing after somebody else. And David is saying that I'm confident that God's covenant love, his covenant faithfulness, will pursue me all the days of my life.
Is it the same word as overtake as in the curses and blessings of Deuteronomy?
I don't know the answer to that. Yeah, it's possible.
It's got that connotation of persecute in a way.
Yeah, persecute, pursue.
Uh-huh. It's the same word used for when Pharaoh changed his mind and chased Moses and the Israelites.
Uh-huh, okay. Yeah. Yeah, it's a pretty common word, and I did a brief survey of it, and it's normally a negative connotation. But here it's very positive. And what David found as part of God's flock, as an honored guest in his tent, was protection from harm, provision of all of his needs. And he's saying that God tends his people in the same way, so that they lack nothing. He provides everything that they need, green pastures, peaceful waters, so that the life is constantly renewed, guides his sheep along right paths, protects and comforts them in the midst of dangerous situations, and the result is that all fear is removed and confidence is given for the future.
The sense of the pursuing still associates with the shepherd who sets the 99 and goes after the lost sheep to go and find him. But isn't it that sense that even if I tend to be going astray, he'll pursue me and restore me and bring me back?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So the pursue fits into that rather than just following. He actually follows with a purpose to bring me back into protection, into the protected place.
Yeah. He's not necessarily promised to keep me from going astray,
no.
But he does pursue.
He'll pursue me.
Yeah.
He might bring me back into Father goodness. His goodness, the sense of the presence of God and his love is that which that God himself will follow me with his love to bring me back.
Yeah. Yeah, the word is one of my favorite Old Testament words, that loving kindness. It's hard to translate into one word. Yeah, chesed, it's loyal love. Or something like that, faithful love, that God can be counted on to act in a certain way because he's in relationship with us. And as C.S. Lewis said, God's love for us is a much safer topic than our love for God. And when you read the word study books on that particular word, that's what it says. It says God's loyal love, his covenant faithfulness is sure, ours is not. But we should.
Faith is always based on the faithfulness of God.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. So you and I are sheep, which implies we may not be that bright, or we may not be that as bright as we think we are, and that we're really kind of helpless at times. And I wonder if that's how we tend to see ourselves. I'm pretty sure it's not the way that I tend to see myself as much. Somebody paraphrase verse 4. Yeah, though I walk through the valley of death, I will fear no evil, for I am the meanest so-and-so in the valley. And I've edited that. There are a couple different versions of so-and-so that I ran across. But really, that's the proud human take on this psalm. I'm not a sheep. I don't need protection. I don't need anyone looking after me. And for those of us who are involved in ministry and leading other people, it's easy for us to start believing our own press releases. You know, a press release, you know, so-and-so's coming to town and he's wonderful and, you know, and this. And we start believing that stuff. It's easy for us just to listen to our fans and not listen to the people that might criticize us. I came across a blog by a guy named Paul Tripp. Do you know Paul Tripp? I hadn't read much of him, but I really like this. Titled, If You Still Think You've Arrived. It's on the Gospel Coalition website just recently. Anybody seen this? Yeah, very good. He said, gospel-driven, Christ-centered ministry, one that gives grace to those who hear, doesn't start with theological knowledge. And I thought we could add to that preaching skills, management ability, personal charisma, stuff like that. It starts with a humble heart. It starts with recognition of your own need. And the acknowledgement, this is the line that really caught me, the acknowledgement that you and I are more like than unlike the people to whom God has called us to minister. Do you see yourself as a sheep? Or do you somehow see your people as, no, that's them, they're the sheep, I'm the shepherd? That really hit me. And because I think that sometimes we forget that.
We start to act like God.
Yeah, we start to act like God. Yeah. Yeah.
We think we are.
Yeah, we think we're God. Sorry, if I'm repeating myself, Andrew's asked me to, so I'm not thinking that I'm saying what he said. Yeah. Yeah, that's right. We forget who we are.
And then we actually become quite un-God-like in the way we see.
That's right. And I don't know if you've seen shepherds becoming very ungodlike, but it's not that attractive. Sheep then become something that we use. Sheep become something that we drive for our own agenda. They become something that we get frustrated with. It's interesting to look at the negative images of the shepherd image in the examples of the shepherd image in the Old Testament. Passages like Ezekiel 34. It says, this is what my shepherds are doing, and I'm going to sack the lot of you, and I'm going to shepherd you myself, my flock myself. And that's the imagery in the Old Testament is fascinating, I think, on this, even outside of Israel, because you've got the kings of ancient Babylon, Assyria, they were called shepherds. And let me know if I'm boring you with any of this stuff. The Code of Hammurabi, for example. On the top of it, it's a stela. I don't know if you've seen it, but on the very top, there's this this image. And the sun god Shamash is sitting on his throne, and Hammurabi is standing in front of him with the law code that the god has just given him. And the imagery is quite fascinating, even though it's idolatry and it's ungodly. Shamash is the sun god, and he's also the god that's responsible for justice. If you think through that, why would they pick the sun god for that? Well, it's because he is constantly looking over the earth, and he's illuminating human beings and showing what they do. And so he's concerned about justice. And Hammurabi hasn't come up with the law code himself. He's been appointed by the gods to keep justice in the land and to bring prosperity to the people by doing that. Which is not that different from what the king in Israel was supposed to do. God is the real shepherd and owner of the sheep. And he's just gone out and he's gotten an under-shepherd, David and David's family primarily, and they're the ones who are to be shepherding his flock, bringing prosperity to the flock. Somebody mentioned the cursings of Deuteronomy earlier, making sure that the people live by the covenant. Because if they live by the covenant, the blessings will come to the flock, there'll be prosperity, but if they don't, they won't. And he's as responsible to keep the law as they are. And that's what makes David's sin with Bathsheba become quite serious, is he set himself above the law. He's broken at least three of the Ten Commandments. He deserves to die for what he's done, and God graciously allows him to live. It's interesting, David's two failures, great failures in Samuel, shepherd imagery comes into the story. So Nathan comes to David and he says, there's this man that had this one little lamb, and the neighbor was a rich man, you know. And so he brings shepherd imagery to show you haven't been a good shepherd. He touches David's heart. And then when David takes the census at the end of 2 Samuel, David sees the angel of the Lord killing the people. And he says, may the judgment come on myself and my house. But these sheep, what have they done? Mm-hmm. And so he's highlighting the fact that I have been a poor shepherd. And I've brought lack, I've brought destruction to God's people as a result of it. So it's pretty powerful imagery, I think. And I think this psalm, starting in the place where it does, reminds us that, hey, we're sheep. Even though we're shepherds, we're sheep. And we still need it. We still need our shepherd. And then following on from that, we need to remember that God has promised to take care of his sheep. God has promised to be with us. He's promised to provide for us. He's promised to protect us. A couple passages from the New Testament. Hebrews 13:5. God has said, never will I leave you, never will I forsake you. Philippians 4:19, and my God will meet all your needs according to his glorious riches in Christ Jesus. I think of a couple examples when my wife and I were pastoring back in Iowa many years ago. A couple stories. Our salary was pretty meager. Wasn't on the big bucks of a Bible college principal like I am now. And the church had just given us a raise, but then the money didn't come in, so they took it off of us. You know, so it was kind of a... And good people. It's not like it's one of these churches that was really stingy intentionally. They were stingy out of necessity. So it was a little bit of a discouraging time, and we were driving this two-door Ford Fiesta. About that time, I was getting to know this couple, a guy that I'd met playing basketball, and getting to know them. And the church was having this evangelistic Valentine's banquet coming up. And I'm going, got a bit cranky with God and saying, God, we can't even pick these people up in our car and take them to this stuff because it's just too cramped. And lo and behold, Diane's dad decided that he was going to sell his old car, and it was a bigger car, sort of a minivan kind of a thing, and we'd used it before. We really liked it. Couldn't afford a car, but he said, "I tell you what, I'll sell it for you for what they're going to give me trade-in," and that did fit within our budget and everything. And so we were able to get that car, and we were able to pick up this couple and to take them to the night. And you know, so God condescended to where I was at, and gave us what we needed. And I think it was probably what we needed to do what we were doing. The other time that I think of was we used to have the young people over for breakfast on Friday mornings, and it was primarily the guys that would come. And if you know high school-aged guys, they eat a lot of food. And we were starting to think, you know, I don't know if we can afford to do this because... It really is kind of expensive. It was really helpful, but we're not sure. And then again, lo and behold, I get this call from the Wonder Bread thrift store in my hometown, which they have these day-old shops where they put the day-old bakery goods. And they had this deal where every month they would pull a name out of a barrel, and then you got to come in and do a two-minute shopping spree. And in 2 minutes, pull whatever you wanted off the shelf and fill up a trolley. And you couldn't just go like that on the shelf. You had to actually pull them off one by one. But, yeah, it would have been great, you know, just kind of empty the shelves. Yeah, they probably did. Well, and we ended up being second on the list of highest amount. You know, it was like 60, 70 bucks I was able to pull off in 2 minutes. And that filled up our freezer with stuff for breakfast, but more importantly, it filled up our spiritual tanks. Mm-hmm. And it refreshed us, kind of like that, He restores my soul mm-hmm. by His provision. So it was for us, it was a very tangible demonstration of the Lord is our shepherd. Mm-hmm. The Lord gives us what we need. And He realizes that we sometimes have a hard time seeing our way through. In ministry, He restored our soul. And so I kind of want to throw out, what do you need from your shepherd today? You know, what's the crisis that you're going through? What's the valley of the shadow of death, the valley of darkness that you're walking through? And for some of us, it might be death, sickness and death of a loved one. I visited somebody in the hospital yesterday who's had some cancer taken off of his pancreas, never a good area. To be messing with. We've had one of our students' father just died, you know, in the last week or so, and they've had the funeral. For others, it might be financial. Others, it might be emotional crisis. Might be people in ministry, we get overworked, we get busy, we say yes to too many things. We fly around here and there. And maybe I thought about this... God's goodness and love pursues us because He's having a hard time catching up with us. You know, because we're running here and there and everywhere, and so He has to pursue us with His goodness and His love. Maybe And as we minister to people, we have emotionally draining people in our lives. If you're involved in church work, you have emotionally draining people in your life. So maybe it's an emotional crisis. Maybe it's frustration. Not being able to find a job, not being able to get a ministry position, things like that. I did a search on this word translated shadow of death and just typed it in. And so all the pictures that came up were Hebrew or were Israeli. And there were three groups of pictures that kind of stood out. There was pictures of people in the armed forces, which, you know, when you hit 18 in Israel, you go into the army for 2 years, and then it's a month of service till you're 50 or 55, something like that. That was really easy to understand, thinking about going through the valley of the shadow of death in armed service. The other two areas kind of surprised me, though. One was wedding pictures, people getting married, and pregnant women. But then I stopped and I thought about that, and I thought, you know, those are life changes. Moving from one kind of life that's familiar and we've got a handle on it to an area of unknown. And we could probably plug in some other areas, you know, as we get older. Some of us, you know, we move into retirement, or we leave this stable, steady income to who knows what, living on a pension, something like that. We've got a couple pregnant people at the college right now. Yeah, one of the couples has actually lost a baby before, gone pretty much full term, then lost the baby. You know, so there this uncertainty of life. For some of us, it might be spiritual, the valley of the shadow of death. Maybe depression. I've got a friend who's been struggling with depression. Started with a physical condition, and has kind of morphed into a emotional depression situation. Could be sin. Could be addiction of some kind. Perhaps you're married to somebody in that situation. And the psalm doesn't promise that God is always going to lead us on really nice paths. It's going to lead us on the right paths, the paths of righteousness. But it might not be a bright, broad, sunlit path. Sometimes it might get a little bit scary. And I take it the way that this is written, that it's going to happen to all of us. And life tells us that as well. We occasionally, inevitably, eventually find ourselves walking in the valley of the shadow of death. And what I guess I'd close up with is, do you have the humility to view yourself as a sheep? To view yourself as not having all the answers and being quite needy at times? Because I think as people in ministry, it's really easy to forget that. We help others. We lead others, but shepherds need a shepherd. We need someone to protect us. We need someone to provide for us. And one interesting thing, I teach hermeneutics, Bible study methods, so I'm always looking at structure and things like this. One thing that stood out to me is that the psalm basically begins and ends with the same word. Basically. And what's that? The Lord. The Lord. This psalm is fundamentally about the Lord, whatever else it is. It's bookended, it's framed by that. And I want to read it just all the way through once again. A psalm of David, the Lord is my shepherd, I shall not be in want. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside quiet waters. He restores my soul. He guides me in paths of righteousness for his name's sake. Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. You anoint my head with oil. My cup overflows. Surely goodness and love will follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever.